key economic releases affecting fixed income yields. Insights into sectors influencing fixed income securities. How AAM plans to capitalize on these themes for your fixed income portfolio. The Portfolio Fix is a podcast series featuring members of AAM's investment and portfolio management team. We will discuss the timely issues affecting the fixed income investments of our insurance clients.
Welcome to another episode of the Portfolio Fix, a podcast series from AAM. My name is Patrick McGeever, and I'm a member of AAM's investment team. Today, Marco Bravo will be providing AAM's latest outlook on the economy, and then I'll discuss why natural gas prices in Europe are likely to remain a headwind for the next several years. So with that out of the way, welcome, Marco.
Thanks, Pat. Great to be here, as always.
Good deal. So we last spoke in mid-October, and just a little bit of background for the audience here. Yields on the long end have declined by about 25 basis points since then. Risk assets, particularly the corporate bond market, has done really well in the past 4 weeks. And the VIX has declined pretty sharply. So what do you think are the most important economic developments since we last spoke in mid-October?
Well, I think there were two main drivers of the macroeconomic outlook. And one was the November FOMC meeting by the Fed. And it kind of sent a mixed message to investors. There was no surprise that the Fed raised rates by 75 basis points at that meeting. The market and AAM, we were expecting 75 basis points. The statement that followed the meeting seemed to suggest that the Fed was ready to kind of reduce the pace of tightening. And the market kind of took that positively, thinking that the next rate hike likely to be 50 basis points versus the 75 basis points that they've been on. But then following the release of the statement during Chairman Powell's press conference, kind of walked that back and left the market a little uneasy when he said that it's likely they'll need to raise rates higher than what they were projecting back in September. So that was a little bit more of a hawkish tone, and market kind of sold off on that news. But then we had the October CPI report, which came in weaker than expected, a lot softer. We saw core good prices actually decline month over month. And that really kind of set the stage for this rally that we've seen, equity markets up, credit spreads tighter, and yields lower. So the Fed policy, the Fed meeting, and the October CPI report, kind of the two key events since we last spoke.
Okay, so inflation clearly has been something that the Fed is trying to get under control, and that our committee, the Economic Committee, has tried to get our arms around. We had a meeting earlier this week, and we spent quite a bit of time discussing what are the key items actually influencing inflation right now. I guess my question is, what do you think it is? Do you think it's labor and the tight labor market? Do you think it's rents or something entirely else? What do you think?
Well, if we look at, let's take a step back and look at kind of where we're seeing pressure on prices as reported from the CPI. And that's really coming from the services portion. As I mentioned earlier, prices on goods seem to be rolling over. Supply issues seem to be lessening, reduced demand from consumers. So it's really on the services side that we're still seeing pressure. And we think that's really a function of continued strong wages. So the labor market, as you correctly mentioned, remains tight. We saw that in October. Job growth came in stronger than expected. A survey of small business owners continue to suggest that owners are having a difficult time filling open positions. The quality of labor among owners was cited as the second most important problem that they're facing. And most recently, the Atlanta Fed wage growth tracker has wages increasing at a pace of 6.4% year over year. And so this all suggests that labor markets have yet to really loosen. And with the tight labor market should keep upward pressure on prices, which would lead to continued demand for services. So it's really the tight labor market, in our opinion, that is the key from this point.
Okay, given what you just said about the hiring surveys and tight labor conditions, that's something that's not going to ease up in the next month or two. So what are AAM's expectations for future rate increases? And I guess, what are our expectations then for how those rate increases will affect economic growth over the next, call it, 2 to 3 quarters?
Sure. Well, it's important to put in perspective and keep in mind that, you know, the rate increases operate with a lag. And so we haven't yet seen the labor market weaken, but we would expect that even the rate increases we've seen up to now will start to eventually impact the economy. We've already seen that in the housing market. Housing demand has effectively fallen off a cliff given the rise in mortgage rates. But with respect to the Federal Reserve and policy rates, we're expecting another 100 basis points of total rate hikes, with 50 of that 100 coming at the December meeting. So this will bring the Fed funds rate up to a range of 4.75% to 5%. The question then becomes, is that where the Fed actually pauses? Really depends on the development for both inflation and employment. And I would say that if we're wrong with respect to our forecast, we're likely to be too low versus too high. In other words, there's a greater chance that the Fed rates have to move above 5% in order to bring inflation lower. And so as the Fed continues to increase interest rates, financial conditions will continue to tighten and increases the risk of a recession. And the consensus right now is projecting GDP growth of only 0.4% in 2023. At AAM, we view the risks for GDP growth as skewed to the downside relative to the consensus outlook. And so we expect the economy to officially enter a recession within the next 12 months.
Okay, so a minimum of 100 basis points in rate hikes with the risk skewed towards the upside. You have a Fed funds target of 4.75% to 5%, GDP growth to the downside. What does all this mean for risk assets? Because like I said earlier, they've performed really well over the past month.
Yes, we think the markets, equity credit markets, the rally that we saw following the softer CPI report, that the market may be a little ahead of itself. And we think there's a greater risk from this point forward that spreads widen and equity markets decline, just given the continued uncertain outlook for inflation, Fed policy, and economic growth.
Great. Yeah, Marco, that's fantastic information. Thanks for your time as always. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mike Ashley, and I'm a member of the corporate credit team at AAM. Today is a special day. We get to turn the tables, and I get to have a chat with Pat McGeever, senior research analyst with a focus on the energy sector. Hi, Pat. How are you doing today?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing well. It's nice to hear that it's a special day.
Absolutely. Well, we have witnessed several unprecedented events in the last couple of years in the financial markets, which has kept everyone on their toes. And of course, the energy sector is no exception. Today, we get to talk about the European natural gas industry, which has been a very important topic. Pat, the European natural gas has been on a roller coaster ride over the past year. Explain to me why prices are now off 35% of their peak.
Yeah, actually, they're off by 75% from their peak. And the simple answer is inventory. It's at a normal level right now compared to where we were back in August when markets were really concerned that inventory would not be sufficient. Looking back in the summer of 2022, there was a perfect storm in Europe that caused prices to go to about $100 per 1,000 cubic feet. That's about 10 times the U.S. benchmark, just for context. The storm was demand for electricity spiked due to warm weather, warmer than normal summer. At that same time, renewables were basically unavailable due to conditions. That's like hydro, wind, solar. They were not nearly as available as most people had expected. And also nuclear was offline. So you had natural gas demand from the electric utilities was spiking. And at that very same time, obviously you had supply from Russia that was cut off, and Russia supplies about 40% of European supply, or about 14 billion cubic feet per day. So that's what was going on during the summer. Fast forward to today, and Europe basically took every available liquefied natural gas, LNG, every LNG cargo off the market to make up for the lost supply from Russia. And you had curtailed demand for natural gas out of Europe. And as a result, inventory levels right now are about 95 to 100% of where they would be historically, which is great. And prices have dropped to $22 per 1,000 cubic feet, which is much better than the summer, but it's still about four times as high as the U.S. benchmark.
Okay. Well, it seems like their supply of natural gas is sufficient now for this winter. You know, what do you see happening in 2023 in terms of supply, demand, and what do you think that means for prices then?
Sure. The quick answer is that I think it's going to be another year of high natural gas prices in Europe relative to what they have historically experienced, but it probably won't get to the heights that we saw in 2022. I do have two big concerns, and the first one is Europe going to be able to attract the liquefied natural gas cargoes like they did this past summer? Really, that's dependent on the China's COVID response. Throughout 2022, China has locked down significant portions of their economy. And as a result, that freed up LNG cargoes that were typically bought by the Chinese, but were diverted to Europe when they had their own natural gas crisis. So if China opens up, there'll be larger consumers of natural gas, and they'll fight for those LNG cargoes. So that's a concern for me in the upcoming year for Europe. And then secondly is demand destruction, particularly from German industrial consumers. The fact that Europe reduced demand significantly in the fall of this year has allowed inventories to increase, and that helped out. If you look at German industrial demand for natural gas, like chemical companies, fertilizer, aluminum smelters, that declined by 25% year over year. So I think natural gas prices in 2023 will have to be high enough to outbid the Chinese and East Asia, but that's going to come at a cost, certainly to economic growth for Europe.
Okay, yeah, you know, what do you think this means for economic growth in Europe?
Yeah.
What are the ramifications?
Yeah, I think it's going to be challenging. When you look at the past decade in Europe, typically about 1% of their GDP went to natural gas expenditures. Now, with natural gas prices rising, they're spending 3, 4, 5% of their GDP on natural gas. And that means less capital available to buy other items. So I think that's a problem. Obviously, what I just said about industrials, chemical plants, fertilizer plants, paper plants, aluminum plants, they shut down temporarily to address the natural gas issues in the summer of 2022. My question is, will those temporary changes be permanent? And so that could have negative consequences for their GDP going forward. I think not many people are talking about this right now, but I think it could lead to supply chain issues in 2023. Anything that requires natural gas, any supplies that we get from Europe that are developed or manufactured using natural gas, I think are going to be in short supply in 2023. And then the last item on this topic of economic growth is, look at Germany. Its economy has been very heavily reliant on exports for the past decade. They've something like $240 billion per year on a $4.2 trillion economy has been based on net exports. Now, because they're importing such high cost natural gas, that advantage has been completely wiped out. And so the trade surplus is gone. And so that's concerning to me. I think 2023, and actually I think this is going to last for a couple years. I think the economic conditions in Europe are going to be challenging.
And you talked earlier about liquefied natural gas, LNG. Do you believe LNG imports could offer a solution to this problem?
I do. I think it's an expensive solution and it's an intermediate term solution. If you look at, there's two components you need for LNG imports to be to increase in Europe. First, you need to have more LNG export facilities from the countries that actually produce natural gas. And then secondly, you need import facilities throughout Europe, particularly in Germany. If you look at the export facilities take 3 years to build out, and they're very expensive. Right now, those export facilities that are scheduled to come online in significant quantities won't be available until 2025, 2026, 2027. The import facilities in Europe are going to come on in tiny amounts over the next year or two and then increase significantly in 2027. So that's why I said it's more of an intermediate term solution rather than a short term solution. We just don't have the facilities just take a very long time to build out. Hey, Mike, I think that's probably a good point to wrap up this conversation here. So thank you very much for having this discussion with me and hosting. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Good deal. Of course, we want to thank you, the listener, for taking time to listen to our podcast. If you have any questions, please reach out to your portfolio manager or our marketing team at aamcompany.com. During our next podcast, I'll be joined by Marco and another member of our investment team to discuss a timely issue.